Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top.
Wow.
And here's Lucas and Mitchell. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Fight Week is here for what is undoubtedly the biggest mixed martial arts fight of 2018, and we are going to preview everything related to UFC 229 on this edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, heard here on RadioInfluence.com with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, along with previewing UFC 229. We're going to take a look back at last Saturday night's Bellator 206. We'll have our buy-sell segment. We'll talk about some various news going on in MMA. I'll have conversations with Brian Edwards to get a betting preview of UFC 229. Plus, I'll talk to Rakeem Cleveland, who's going to be taking on Vinny Magulace next Saturday night at the PFL show. Talk to him about potentially fighting two times in one night. Of course, the first two rounds of that tournament take place on the same night. And also, we'll talk to Mario Bautista, a fighter out of the MMA lab. He's going to be fighting next Saturday at Combat Days America, so we'll talk to him about his matchup. Daniel, as always, great to talk MMA with you. It is a huge fight week. It's great to have Conor McGregor back, because when Conor is fighting, it's a huge fight week. And I don't know if you have kind of the same situation that I've had going on. I've had so many friends who never contact me about UFC fights that are hitting me up on text messages, phone calls saying, "Hey man, where are you watching the fights on Saturday night?"
Yeah, I don't know if it's just you, and it also maybe speaks to myself and all the MMA fans listening to this, but I think we're all going to go to about three, or we're all invited to 3 to 10 different UFC 229 watch parties. If you're listening to this, you're probably a hardcore MMA fan. If you're listening to this, this weekend is big for you, because you are the guy, the go-to guy to talk Conor McGregor, to talk Nurmagomedov, to be like, ooh, this fight on the main card is really interesting, as you sit around a bunch of daddy sodas and buffalo wings and watch the card. So yes, absolutely, you can definitely tell. And it just is a huge, huge week for the UFC. Right after maybe the biggest week of the year for Bellator, we jump right into the biggest week of the year for the UFC. And man, it's been 22 months since Conor McGregor fought in the UFC. There's this weird deal when it comes to being a star in the UFC, in that the bigger star you become, the less we actually see you fight. So it's almost 2 years, but I'm just kind of looking forward to seeing Conor fight once more. And now he's taking on a guy in Nurmagomedov who represents the biggest challenge in his career, Jason.
No question. Of course, if this is the first time listening to the MMA Report podcast, appreciate you checking us out. You can always subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. I mean, look, breaking down Conor McGregor versus Khabib is not very hard. This is the old school MMA fight. Grappler against striker. The thing that, as I have watched various people, you know, talk about this fight, do you get the perception that I get that people are counting out Conor McGregor in this fight?
I do to a small extent, but I do know you are a person who owns 3 Conor McGregor fighter kits. So I think you see life through lime green tinted glasses, Jason. And I see what you're saying, but I still see plenty of predictions for Conor first round knockout. I just think you're Team McGregor, Jason.
Well, look, if Conor's winning this fight, in my mindset, it is within the first 5 minutes. That's why when you hear my conversation with Brian Edwards, I talk about that prop bet that's out there about Conor winning the first round. Earlier this week, it was plus 500. You know, that is a prop bet you want to take advantage on. If this fight hits the 8 minute mark or so, or maybe even before that, maybe the start of the second round, it totally favors Khabib Nurmagomedov. There's no question about it. But I think the one thing that I don't hear a lot of people talking about, I mean, look, we all know that Khabib's grappling is by far the best in the UFC. There's no question he's the best grappler in the UFC. But when we talk about the huge advantage that Khabib has in the grappling, the advantage Conor has in the striking is just as big. And that to me is a part that people really haven't talked about. And I think the what's going to be interesting for me in watching this fight will be in the first 30 seconds. Do we see Khabib with that usual pressure right as the fight starts? Or does Khabib kind of sit back a little bit, try to see what Conor's doing, and maybe do we have a little bit of a chess matchup in that first minute as opposed to Khabib just, you know, rushing forward? Because I think if Khabib rushes forward, he could get knocked out in the first 30 seconds.
I mean, we've seen it with Jose Aldo, 13 seconds in, Conor counters. I mean, and Conor does have just an unbelievable ability to almost fight as if, in his mind, things are going twice as slow as they actually are, but in reality, he fights twice as fast as they actually are. He does have great vision with exchanges, and it's unbelievable, and it's something he can take advantage of. And it's a tough deal for Nurmagomedov because the goal is fairly simple. Eliminate space, bring the fight down. But if you go and you attempt and you get too aggressive early on, but you attempt to bring the fight down, that's where you get set up for that first round knockout loss. Now, if you're too patient, you know, you're also not taking down McGregor. He's outpointing you, and eventually he may be able to find the distance that way to land the fight-ending blow. So, I mean, this is a difficult fight. Absolutely. I think Nurmagomedov deserves to be the favorite, but I think the odds in terms of maybe not the coverage, but the actual odds, I think they're pretty, pretty accurate when you have at five dimes through best fight odds. You have Nurmagomedov at minus 165. And Conor at plus 155. I tend to agree with those odds. That's a close fight. I think the problem for Nurmagomedov is, I would almost disagree with you, just a tad bit, that I do think the gap in wrestling is bigger than the gap in striking. Now, I don't – look, if Nurmagomedov goes out there and decides to show off for Oscar De La Hoya and apply to be, you know, maybe the next boxer – to bring back boxing to HBO and showcase his stand-up, he's going to lose. Like he's absolutely going to lose. There is a big gap. But Nurmagomedov's stand-up with his pressure aspect has impressed me in some of his victories against guys who I thought were going to go out there and outstrike him. I absolutely do not think he will outstrike Conor McGregor, but I think he's good enough to be somewhat competitive at times, whereas with the wrestling, man, I think that's a huge, huge, huge gap. I don't see Nurmagomedov closing that space and not getting a takedown. I find it very difficult for Conor to consistently get back up. So the reason why I gravitate towards Nurmagomedov is because I just think that, you know, 7 times out of 10 in this fight, he's going to get that takedown. He's going to rain down blows, demoralize Conor, and get him frustrated. 3, 4, hell, maybe it's 5 for 5. Maybe 5 times out of 10, Conor does get that knockout. But the reason why I gravitate towards Nurmagomedov is I just feel as though, Jason, it's the safer pick, not to mention a factor that it's very hard for either of us to calculate is the mental space of either fighter.
That, to me, is really the – you know, I think if these guys fight 10 times, I think Khabib probably wins 7 times. You know, clearly he is a favorite of this matchup because – I mean, let's just look at the UFC champions across the board. Pretty much all of them are wrestlers for the most part. You know, so, you know, if you can get the fight to the ground, you're able to control it. You know, my thought process and why I'm picking Conor McGregor in this one is I think Khabib's going to rush at him. And I think that's a major mistake because he could end up just getting caught. You know, one of the things about Conor is the accuracy he has with that left hand. You know, he's not throwing something just to throw something. He's throwing something to knock you out. I just think Conor has a better chance. From a betting aspect, if you want to fight, if you want to place a bet on Conor McGregor, you should have placed that bet already now because I don't know if you're going to get better odds than you're getting right now. If you're a Khabib backer, wait till literally 5 minutes before this fight starts because Conor McGregor money is going to come in and you're going to get a much better number than minus 165. But, I mean, look, it's a very interesting matchup. It wouldn't surprise me if we see these guys fight a second time at some point in both of their careers. I'll tell you, you know, I was watching something earlier today, and, man, the fight I really want to see with Khabib, and I'll see if you're on this one, Khabib Gregor Gillespie.
Wow. No, you know, that's not something that comes to mind immediately. But upon further review down the line, Jesus, that sounds great. Khabib's never a part of that, you know, those dream matches you have in your head. They involve Ferguson, they involve Eddie Alvarez, they involve Dustin Poirier. But I think we're talking about a fight between Gillespie and Nurmagomedov that's going to be pretty damn interesting from a grappling standpoint and a stand-up standpoint. So I am 100% would watch Gillespie Nurmagomedov, Jason. But are you saying you want that fight after Khabib loses? Are you saying that with your McGregor fighter kit on?
No, not at all. I just that's a fight at some point I would like to see. Obviously, Gregor Gillespie's got to probably get, I would say, at least two more wins, maybe three, to where he gets in that conversation. But I'm thinking long term, because of Gillespie's grappling and Khabib's grappling, that's a fight that does interest me. But, you know, there's something you brought up about Conor and the mental warfare. And we saw this, 2 weeks ago in New York, when they did that press conference where, people around Khabib's camp are saying, oh, it didn't affect Khabib. But I don't know how it didn't affect Khabib. And this is the thing that makes Conor's mental warfare so unique, is that he looks into every aspect of someone's life. I mean, you see him talking about Khabib's dad. You see him talking about Khabib's manager. And I expect that's going to continue on Thursday when they do this pre-fight press conference in Vegas. Fans are going to be there. You know that's going to be a crazy environment. I mean, that's, I think, you know, when you wonder about what is the mental mindset going to be like for Khabib on Saturday night, that's something you do wonder. I also wonder, what if that doesn't work? Does that have an effect on Conor? Like, oh my God, this guy's not affecting it. I mean, it's, I'll sit here and say this. If Conor is not winning the first round, I don't think he's winning. I think it's highly unlikely. Clearly we know there's gas tank concerns. I mean, if this fight somehow, I'd be fairly shocked if this fight makes it to the fourth round.
Yeah, I mean, if it does, that just means Conor surviving. Just because I feel as though in that fourth and fifth round, that's just clear-cut Nurmagomedov 10-8s. It's ground and pound and stuff like that. So, I mean, Conor's a tough son of a gun. We've only seen him lose one time in the UFC, and I think we've only seen him go the distance like twice in his entire UFC career. And I don't believe either of those. I think only one of those fights went the distance, the Nate Diaz bout. So I could certainly see that not happening. And the thing is, the mental aspect that we're talking about, I guess I think you would have to put it in Conor's favor slightly, because it feels as though he is the one dictating the mind games. He clearly knows how to upset Nurmagomedov, and being upset could lead to Nurmagomedov wanting to score that knockout, or just be aggressive with the stand-up early on and be emotional with his decision-making inside the cage, which could allow for that loss. The flip side for the mental games is, despite the fact that Conor McGregor has thus far done a phenomenal job of preparing himself for fights in the midst of seemingly having a life in tatters, you know, he lives his life like a rock star at times, and it makes you wonder how he has time to prepare. But it's clear that he really understands how to prioritize training and whatnot. I still have questions about the training for this fight, just because he seems crazier than he's ever been in his entire life. Going back to throwing a thing, the guardrail at the bus, times when he was in trouble with the law, it just seems as though I'm scared for Conor that even though up until now he has passed every test when it comes to preparing for a fight, I'm just scared that at some point he's going to buy his own hype too much, and he's going to be in a place where he's not necessarily grappling with reality, maybe similar to how Tyson was heading into Buster Douglas. Now, I'm not saying Conor has as many problems as Tyson did at that point. I'm just saying that sometimes when you get too high, the sun burns you.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously he was there to protect his friends. We said back then, you know, Conor McGregor clearly a ride or die friend. Something else to note: both of these fighters have had 10 fights in the UFC. Of course, Khabib undefeated. Conor with that one loss. Khabib made his UFC debut January 20th, 2012. Conor made his debut April 6th, 2013, of course, you know, you mentioned early on, first fight for Connor in almost 2 years. And, of course, Khabib has had the injury situation. But when you look at their resumes, they're two different resumes. When you look at the names that are on here, you look at, first off, for Conor McGregor, Marcus Brimage, Max Holloway, Diego Brandão, Dustin Poirier, Dennis Seaver, Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo, Nate Diaz, and Eddie Alvarez. For Khabib Nurmagomedov, Kamaru Usman, Gleison Tibau, Thiago Tavares, Abel Trujillo, Pat Healy, Rafael Dos Anjos, Daryl Horsher, Michael Johnson, Edson Barboza, and Ally Quinta. I think in terms of the best win, you have to say for Khabib Nurmagomedov, I would go with Rafael Dos Anjos. And for Conor McGregor, I got to go with Jose Aldo. What would your vote be on the best win in the UFC for both fighters?
Oh, man, that's a great comment. I would say for Nurmagomedov, it would absolutely be the Dos Anjos victory. And I think when you compare the resumes, it does stand out that Conor's been in far more major fights. There aren't a whole lot of high level names on Nurmagomedov's schedule. I mean, you're looking at Dos Anjos, Barboza, y Quinta. Actually, the more I think about it, I think I'm gonna switch that to Barboza, just because, despite Dos Anjos' name value and what he's done holding a strap around his belt, I remember after watching the Edson Barboza fight thinking Khabib's back and Jesus, he's better than ever, because he destroyed Barboza in every facet of the game. So that's why I would go with Michael Johnson. And as far as the Conor fight, gosh, this is a tough one. I understand why you would go with Jose Aldo, because December 2015, that's when everything flipped. And it's kind of depressing that since that point, we've only seen Conor fight three times. But Jose Aldo validated Conor McGregor as a superstar. And prior to that point, Aldo was one of the best of all time. So I would certainly say that one. But if I was going to give you a second place, it would absolutely be Conor's most recent fight against Eddie Alvarez, because this was a fight where I thought the tax bill was going to come due and Eddie Alvarez is going to beat Conor. And then they fought. And Conor, man, he bullied the hell out of Eddie Alvarez. And much like the Edson Barboza fight, that was a fight where Conor showed that he still got it, and he's just in a completely different tier than a lot of the top UFC lightweights.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. I'm looking forward to seeing how this fight does play out. I mean, and look, my pick is Conor by knockout in the first round, but this fight hits the second round. I think it's Khabib time. I don't, by no stretch of the imagination, do I think I see this thing going 25 minutes, even though Khabib is talking about how he wants to beat Conor up. I'm sure there's people in Khabib's camp that's like, look, if you got a chance to finish him, you finish him, because the last thing we don't, because, you know, even if he continues to take him down, keeps him down, those opening minutes, opening seconds of a round, all it takes is one punch, and Conor could change it. But I'm guessing you're going with Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, man, I think I'm going to go Khabib third round TKO.
Yeah, I tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me if Khabib gets a submission. That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, like a rear naked choke or something. Because
just where he's worn out Conor, the gas tank's not there. Conor gives up the back, and he gets in the choke.
Okay, what if this happens? What if it's a close fight and Khabib wins a split decision? Does Conor just start a brawl?
Well, I think if it's a split decision for, you know, I think either fighter, I think we can all just guarantee that there's going to be an immediate rematch between these two guys, because, you know, Dana White he did an interview with Brett Okamoto of ESPN on Tuesday where he said this pay-per-view is trending towards 3 million buys, which I hope is right. That'd be unbelievable, but it's just great to be, as someone who has covered a sport since 2009, it's great to have a major fight week, because we haven't had one all year. I mean, maybe you go back to the, what was that, UFC 226? UFC 220 beginning of year, where we had the light heavyweight, and yeah, then the Miocic-Cormier fight, which was that 226?
Yeah, that was. That was the last time it was a quote-unquote big event. But even in comparison to a Conor fight, it's not in the same category.
No.
But
no,
that's for sure a big event, I thought.
And I can say this, as someone who does marketing for a restaurant group that shows UFC events, there is no fighter that brings a crowd like Conor McGregor. It's unbelievable. I can tell you, we're going to have proper number 12, at the bar on Saturday night. I'm sure a lot of Conor fans will definitely be drinking up that proper number 12. I have not tasted it yet, so I don't know, whether it's a decent whiskey or not. So, but we'll find out coming up on Saturday night. But of course, this is just one fight on the card. There's a lot of other fights, and one of the things we kind of want to talk about is, some of the fights that really stick out to us, the ones that, maybe it's because of a fighter on one side, whatnot. There's a couple fights that do kind of stick out to me. One is OSP and Dominic Reyes, just because of, we have seen Dominic Reyes just steamroll through his competition at this point. But now he's getting a big step up in competition against OSP. How does Derek Lewis bounce back after that, the fight no one wants to watch again against Francis Ngannou? The co-main event, I would tell you, when it comes to the safest pick I feel in this fight, actually is the co-main event, picking Tony Ferguson.
Man, that's crazy. Not you're right. You're totally right. But it is crazy that in an Anthony Pettis fight, God, the other side is just so much more appetizing. That speaks to where Tony Ferguson has put himself. At UFC 229, you're going to see the best three lightweights in the world. And after watching these guys compete time and again, I think it's pretty clear there's a big gap between those top three and the rest of the division up until this point. So I think that's why you say that, and I totally agree. I think the storyline of Anthony Pettis beats Tony Ferguson will be more about, the injuries caught up to Tony. It's a different Tony Ferguson. Not necessarily Anthony has reclaimed his right. Now, if Anthony wins, he's putting himself in a hell of a position. But upon this fight being made, my brain went two ways. One, looking forward to this one because it's likely going to be entertaining. Two, why was this made? The answer is, if either Nurmagomedov or Conor McGregor slip on an ice cube, we have our new main event. But, yeah, despite the fact this is one of the fights I'm looking forward to the most, just because anytime Tony Ferguson fights, I am down to watch. And the same can be said for Anthony Pettis. I totally get you, man. I like those fights you laid out. Derek Lewis, I still love you. Despite what you did to me last time, you are an entertaining man on Twitter and inside the cage. So I think the Volkov fight will be great. OSP Dom Reyes, yeah, totally about whether or not Dominic Reyes is going to pass that test. And he could be one of the top topics we talk about next week. The other fight that obviously sticks out to me is on the prelims. Sergio Pettis, Juicier Formiga. I think that flyweight contest is just a battle between two of the top guys in the division, and that's why I'm absolutely looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I mean, we come to OSP and Derek Lewis, and that one really is a tough one, OSP and Dominic Reyes. Why that is a tough one for me to pick is I have questions about Dom Reyes. And because, look, it's a big step up in competition. OSP is a guy that we kind of thought, at one point, where he was, he slipped a little bit. I know OSP has gone out to California to do some training for this one, him and his head coach, Eric Turner. But the question for me is, because we've seen Dom just roll through guys in the first round, what happens if this fight hits the second and third round? What's his fighting style going to be like? So it's more of, we just don't know. We don't know what Dom Reyes could be like in the second round. I love that you mentioned Sergio Pettis and Juicier Formiga. I'm definitely interested in that one. I did get a good chuckle when I was looking at the betting lines for this one. You're going to hear from Brian Edwards here momentarily. Did you see what the over-under number is on the Felice Herrig-Michelle Waterson fight? If I told you... Over
it?
2.5 rounds. If I told you it was minus 485, you would say?
I would say minus 485. That's got to be over. Is that over?
As we're talking here on Wednesday morning, the over 2.5 rounds is minus 485. What's is the there under? Anyone who's predicting that fight ends by stoppage?
What's the under?
Under 2.5 is plus 385.
Okay, that's my bet of the night. Do it. Look, I understand. once you visualize Felice Herrig, Michelle Watson, which should be a great fight, two stars in the women's strawweight division. Man, it's MMA. I know it's hard to visualize a finish here, but it's MMA. If you get plus 385 for a finish, go for it. There might be a guillotine choke, Jason. There might be an arm bar, a knockout, a TKO, a lost contact lens at plus 385. If it's just like there will be a finish, plus 385, I don't care who's fighting. I would take it, Jason. That's your dumbest advice I'll show. Now you should probably listen to some good betting advice.
I like Felice Herrig in the fight to win, but if you tell me someone's going to win by stoppage, I think it's Michelle Waterson.
Yeah, I think so too. I think she's shown more in her career the ability to finish fights, and I also think she's shown more in her career the ability to rally back after maybe being down to score that victory. She understands the desperate need maybe to get the win. But man, Waterson Herrig, they're in a great spot. I wouldn't be surprised if they're the first fight they run out there on the pay-per-view, but if not, I think that may be a fight where people gravitate towards the TV. And you know, a lot of times these UFC cards lately have been great main events and crap main cards, and I can absolutely not say that about this one. I think this is a really solid main card to go along with your main course steak of Conor and Khabib.
And, of course, speaking of those betting odds, I did have a chance to catch up with Brian Edwards, of course, the host of the Game Score podcast here on Radio Influence, also has his website, BrianEdwardsSports.com. So you're going to hear that conversation now. Then when we come back, me and Daniel will go through all of our picks for UFC 229. Then we'll get into our recap of Bellator 206. Now, when I want to talk about betting lines on UFC fights, of course, you hear myself and Daniel talk about it all the time, I got to bring in my buddy Brian Edwards, BrianEdwardsSports.com, host of the Game Schooler podcast, which you can hear on the Radio Influence Network. Brian, as always, it's great to chat with you. It is a big week in terms of the MMA, the return of Conor McGregor, Khabib Nurmagomedov. And from a betting perspective, to me, this is kind of a very easy one to handicap. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, you either think Conor is going to get it done, and so obviously it would be inside the distance, which you can get at a plus 175, or you can get him to win in the specific to the first round at plus 500, you know, risk 100, win 500, and to win by KO is plus 175. So plus 175 inside the distance or by KO and knockout, or I'm sorry, in the first round, 5-1. Now the normal price, you know, the regular straight price, right now most books are either minus 155 to minus 170 on Khabib. Conor, your best underdog odds plus 150 at 5 dimes. Others in the plus 30 to plus 140 range. So, but yeah, I mean, it's Khabib's fight. Once it gets, you know, 7 or 8 minutes deep, if Conor doesn't get him before then, conventional wisdom says Khabib's going to maul him with wrestling and superior cardio, grappling, etc. But Conor's better to stand up and could possibly do some Aldo treatment or, you know, get him early second. So I do think it's pretty easy to handicap. Now, what is a little difficult to predict, I think, is the way these odds are going to move between now and then. Most Conor fights we've seen, all the Irish people get to Vegas and every single one of them has got money from their cousin and their aunt and uncle and their money. And they're betting so much on Conor that, you know, maybe the odds shift and maybe Khabib's as cheap as minus 130 or minus 135 come Saturday. That would be interesting because I would like Khabib once it drifts south of minus 140.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, look, we're talking here on Tuesday afternoon, and as Brian's talking about, depending on what book you might place a bet at, the line's going to be different. I mean, you know, just looking at 5 dimes, you know, right now Conor's at plus 150. To me, that if you're going to place money on Conor straight up, you should have already placed your bet this time because I don't think that line's going to get any better than what it is right now. But I love what you said there at the end. If you're a Khabib backer, you're almost waiting till, you know, 10 minutes before this fight starts to probably get the best line possible on Khabib.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a sure fire. You know, we never know how odds will move. But I would say with, you know, about 75-80% confidence that I think you're patient if you like Khabib, as Jason just said. If you like Khabib and you think you want to get a better price, I think you should be patient, because I could see it going down. And especially once, you know, Connor starts, you know, winning the pressers later this week as well and talking people into that I'm going to crush this guy, as he is prone to do. So, yeah, if you're Khabib backer, I think you just chill and you wait till later in the week.
As I said earlier on the podcast, Brian, my pick is Conor McGregor. I've said this now for multiple weeks. People have listened to my podcast for multiple weeks, and if it's the first time listening to my report podcast, appreciate you downloading the podcast. But my pick is Conor McGregor. I think he's going to get us a knockout in the first round. But to me, the thing that I'm fascinated about this fight is how will Khabib fight in those first 30 seconds? To me, that's going to be very telling. You know, a lot of people have talked about, yes, Khabib has a huge advantage in the grappling aspect, no question about it. But Connor has just a big of advantage in the striking aspect of this. And I kind of feel like people have forgotten a little bit about Connor. But one of the things, looking on bestfightodds.com, we've got 64 different prop bets out there. You know, personally, I think the two prop bets, if you're a McGregor backer, McGregor to win the first round or McGregor, to win, inside the distance, maybe by TKO and KO at plus 175 as we're talking. I would say on the Khabib aspect, you know, Khabib to win in the second round would be something I would look at as well, which currently looking on Five Dimes, that's at plus 600.
Yeah, and I see another book as even got it at plus 700. And for him to win in round three is plus 900. Round four, 14-1 odds. And to win in round five is 20-1 odds. So, yeah, there are some big payment opportunities. I found the one at William Hill pretty funny, and I don't like to eat chalk. Like, this kind of goes back to my baseball rule, which, you know, betting UFC is similar to baseball. You know, it's, well, they actually have all kind of baseball odds these days, but, you know, it's just a minus 200, you know, 200 to win 100 on a baseball favorite. You know, it was a rule for me when I bet baseball not to go north of minus 150, and I try to apply that to UFC. Now, I've occasionally bet a minus 160 or minus 170, but the fighters to not touch gloves when they meet in the center of the octagon, to not touch is minus 200, to touch is plus 150. I mean, I don't recommend anything north of minus 150, but if I ever did, to not touch minus 200 looks like a good prop to me.
Now, I'm looking at the prop bets here on William Hill that you mentioned here. So if you think Conor McGregor is going to win in the opening minute of this fight, it is, I just had here a second, I'm trying to, I think it was like plus 1,000, I just had here a second ago.
10-1 odds.
Yeah, 10-1, plus 1,000. I mean, man, that's, I tell you, if you're a McGregor backer, that's, and you're placing a bet at William Hill, that's definitely something that's gotta stick out there for you. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, that's the thing about Connor. When it comes to middle warfare, there is no one that is better, which makes you wonder, could he get in Khabib's head where maybe Khabib kind of doesn't, you know, be who he is? I mean, will we have that forward pressure? I mean, there's I can only imagine the type of prop bets that are going to get laid. And I would say this, I don't think they touch gloves.
No, I don't think so at all. And I mean, did you hear Connor on Errol Hawani's show yesterday? Like, he's talking about, and it's not over after this fight anyway. And it's some big time bad blood for sure. Cannot wait for Saturday night. Can't get it any faster.
Yeah, but also, I mean, look, obviously it's a great fight between Connor and Khabib, and that's where a lot of people are going to be looking to place their bets on. But there's other fights in this card. I mean, as I look at this card from a betting perspective, there's not a ton that sticks out to me, but I know there's a couple of fights that do stick out to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think even though he's coming off that bad injury, you know, Tony Ferguson has been in such great form, 10 fight winning streak, 7 finishes during that run. Now, you know, again, going back to my, you know, thoughts on betting favorites. Now, so betting him minus 360 is not an option for me, but we do have a total and we do have prop options. And I like Ferguson at plus 125 to win inside the distance. We know that he can knock anybody out. We know he can and get the guillotine. And so I like him plus 125 to beat Pettis inside the distance in the co-main. I also like under 2.5 at a plus 120 price at SBG Global. But as long as it's even money, minus 110. I'd still like it, but the fact it's plus money makes it even more attractive. I will say that Ferguson, if the odds, now I didn't go back and check if the over-under odds were 2.5 rounds, but if they were, the under is 6-4 in his last 10, not a ton of them, but and Pettis' back-to-back fights have gone under 2.5. I mean, nice win for Pettis his last time out against Chiesa, but that was a brutal weight cut for Chiesa. And Pettis is just not even, it's crazy to think he's 4 years younger than Ferguson. It would seem like vice versa on that, but I think Ferguson's got the huge edge in this fight, and I think you can bet him at under 2.5 rounds, plus 120 and plus 125 to win inside the distance.
Yeah, I definitely like Ferguson in that one. Anthony Pettis plus 300 as we're currently talking. We got the big heavyweights. Of course, everyone knows that listens to my podcast. Big fan of the social media game of Derek Lewis. He's an underdog in this one, plus 155. Alexander Volkov, minus 175. The only thing that scares me about Derek Lewis in this matchup is the constant talk of his back and where it kind of is there in terms of injury aspect. But I know this is another fight that has your eyes.
Yeah, and you just never know with his back. I mean, even when he wins, I feel like, you know, when he has a sloppy performance, he talks about his back, talked about how he almost pulled out two fights ago, the day of the fight. And obviously, he didn't look good in his last fight, but Ngannou looked even worse, and I was able to catch a nice winner. I mean, you know, you hear him, you know, complaining about his back, and normally, I mean, he's his own harshest critic. And so when you always hear in these post-fight interviews, he seems so down. It's kind of surprising to look at his resume, and he's 8-1 in his last 9 fights, and he's 4-1 the last five. He's been a dog, and he's plus 155 here against Volkov. Now, Volkov, 4-0 in the UFC, back-to-back KOs over Fabricio Werdum and Stefan Struve, but I think both of those fighters' best days are far behind them. Now, again, like you said, and every time with Lewis, I'm scared his back's going to flare up, et cetera. But I think it's done that and bothered him with several fights recently, and yet he's still 8-1 in the last 9. So I'll go with him plus 155.
Also, you know, that's one of those matchups I kind of look at the over in that one, which is plus 110. You know, I don't necessarily, you know, see Volkov getting a stoppage win if he gets the win. I think you got a good chance, but man, I could definitely see Derek Lewis getting a stoppage win. Anything else on this card in terms of the betting lines that stick out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I know Dominic Reyes is 9-0 overall and 3-0 in the UFC, all 3 first round finishes, 8 of his 9 wins in his career by first round finish. But OSP, St. Preux, is in pretty good form right now, 4-1. In his last 5, the under is 4-1 in its last 5, but the under on this one is a 1.5 rounds rather than the 2.5 for the co-main event with Pettis and Ferguson, and is an expensive chalk price, minus 155. But I do like the chances of it going under. I would like for the price to go down a little more, but I leaned under 1.5. But, you know, again, anytime you got a price in the minus 150 or even more range, I would say very small amount there. And I'm not saying bet a lot on OSP, but I give OSP a good shot at winning this one. And right now you can get him around plus 175. There's a plus 185 at 5 dimes and betonline.ag. So lean OSP and the under 1.5 there, but I wouldn't go crazy amount-wise.
And one of the prop bets that just was comical to me on this fight card is Felice Herrig and Michelle Waterson. The over 2.5 rounds, minus 470, which anyone who's listened to my podcast knows, it's an astronomical clip that overs hit in female fights, especially on main cards. But, of course, you are the host of the Game Schooler podcast, which comes out every week here on RadioInfluence.com. What do you got coming up this week on the show, Brian?
Oh, we'll talk lots of football, and we will talk lots of Conor Khabib. Still working on guests. But actually, I take that back. I've got Dave Koken, Smoking Koken of Las Vegas Sports Radio fame. I'm on his show later today, and I'm going to return the favor later this week, and we'll get another guest. But I know who another guest is too. I'm talking about. I got Gam Woo coming on. You and I talked about Conor Khabib last week, and we got Gam Woo. He'll be joining us from Phoenix and GamBlue.com. Check him out. Great guy and knows his fights. Big time, and we'll talk some Gators. Gators on a little roll, and big game against LSU this weekend.
And let everyone know they can follow you out on social media, man.
At Vegas B Edwards, and we've also got a Games Galore podcast, Twitter account at Games Galore Pod, and what else? I guess I got an Instagram if you want to check that out, Fire Network Sports, and we do the Facebook thing too if you want to go to Brian Network Sports and give us the thumbs up, like, dealio.
And there was my conversation with Brian Edwards. Really appreciate him coming on the podcast, talk about the betting lines for UFC 229. If you're looking for some betting advice, you definitely want to check out the Game Scorer podcast here on Radio Influence, hosted by Brian Edwards. Now, let's quickly go through our picks, Daniel. I'll go through mine, then I'll have yours. I'm going to go Conor McGregor, Tony Ferguson. Give me OSP in the upset. I'm also going to take Derek Lewis in an upset as well. I'll go Felice Herrig, Sergio Pettis, Vicente Luque. Give me Tanya Evinger in a underdog role. Alan Patrick, Yana Kunaskayev, Nick Lentz, and Ryan LaFlair.
I also like Ryan LaFlair. Nick Lentz is a smart pick, but Gray Maynard, I'm riding with you. I'm going Yana Kunaskaya, Scott Holtzman, Tonya Evinger, like you, Vicente Luque, Juicio Formiga, Michelle Watterson, Alexander Volkov, Dominic Reyes, Jason, against OSP, Tony Ferguson, and Khabib Nurmagomedov.
And, of course, it all goes down this Saturday night, UFC 229. Of course, next week on the podcast, myself and Daniel will recap what happened. And, of course, last Saturday night, it was Bellator 206 as Gegard Mousasi retains the middleweight title. Rampage Jackson evens up the score against Wanderlei Silva. Douglas Lima advances on in the welterweight tournament. Aaron Pico, man, oof, what another performance by him as well. So I will tell you, got a chance to watch the main event and co-main event live. Was sitting there on my phone watching in my hotel room. I will say, stream was unbelievable. I thought it was a great stream. Didn't buffer, which was something. Look, on hotel Wi-Fi, you really never know what you're going to get. And then I will say this. I went back on Tuesday to watch the other fights on this main card. And one of the things I will say is, it made me appreciate Fight Pass in this capacity. So anyone who has DAZN, or if you don't have DAZN, you know, you log into your DAZN account and you have to click on the event. And so I think the file was like 9-7 hours long or something. And there's no markers. Like, so if you said, hey, I just want to go watch the Aaron Pico fight, you literally have to scroll through all this content before you can find it. Where you, for Fight Pass subscribers, you know, it's very easy. You click on that video and you hit watch fight and you can watch that certain fight. So my advice to DAZN, you might want to make it a little easier on it, but it did make me appreciate Fight Pass a little bit more.
Yeah, man. I think maybe you're going through, they got to put placeholders for one. That's just how it works. But maybe they're just going through, you know, they just started the service, they're learning these things. But for the love of God, put placeholders for each fight. I mean, you don't want to not know the results for Bellator 206. And you open it up and you're like, can't wait to see this Aaron Pico fight. Then you click on the timeline. You're like, oh my God, I spoiled myself. Aaron Pico just finished Leandro Higo. And you accidentally click 30 seconds in the future. Wait, this fight's still going on? Like, you don't want that to happen. Yeah. So, you got to fix that if you're DAZN.
Yeah, but, it's interesting is, you know, and obviously the first 30 days are free. And did see DAZN added KSW. They've got Combates America. They've got Bellator. So they're adding content. I'll be honest, I don't know if I'll keep my subscription. I am considering cutting the cord. Got to make that phone call to DirecTV, basically say, hey, my deal's up. Are you going to give me the same deal? If not, come get the equipment. Because I'm not going to pay without all my discounts on there. But in terms of the main event, I was surprised how it went. We were talking about this before we started recording the podcast, is you would have thought going into this fight that Rory would be the faster guy, and that was not the case. As I'm sitting there watching it, and within about, obviously there was a feeling out process, but after about 2 minutes of this fight, I was like, oh, this is Gegard's fight all the way. I mean, that jab he was throwing was just lighting up Rory. And then Rory goes for the takedown there in the second round, which I thought was more of a takedown out of desperation than anything else. But man, what a performance by Gegard. I love Gegard's post-fight interview, talking about Machida. I love the fact that it's clearly he's on board to fight Rafa Lovato, saying, hey, I don't want to sit around and wait for Machida if he gets that win against Carvalho. So if you're Rafa Lovato, that was probably, you probably had a really good night at that point. But man, I just thought Rory would be much more competitive than what he was.
Yeah, man, Bellator 206 was a great card, but it wasn't necessarily a card of even fights. It was a card where guys made claims, guys moved up, and certain guys failed. And while Rory is still just a force at 170, you are right. I thought the power, the size, clearly would be an advantage for Musasi, and I like the way you brought that up at first. When you think of, stereotypically, the bigger guy versus smaller guy, man, you check the power in the bigger guy box and the speed advantage in the smaller guy. That was not the case. The stand-up was all Musasi, both from a point and power standpoint. That last attempt, man, I mean, that was like a Hail Mary pass, but the quarterback threw it straight to the sidelines. Sign of desperation. Man, just a phenomenal, phenomenal outing for Gegard Musasi, for Rory McDonald. I think it hurts a little bit, but I think most people watching do know he's still one of the best welterweights in the world. But moving forward, I think maybe it makes him a little vulnerable heading into that welterweight tournament, because that is a bit of a traumatic loss. And then you begin to look at what Musasi's done in his last, what, 8 fights? This guy is 8-0. If he continues to piece this together with a win over Rory and stuff like that, Bellator can feel confident in that they have absolutely one of the best middleweights in the world. And if he consistently fights out there and he's a part, and that was my general thought with this card. I understand this card was kind of stacked, so maybe it's not evident of what we get every year. But my general thought watching this card, watching this fight between Musasi and McDonald, is, man, Bellator has really done a nice job of acquiring talent. They have guys that are all over the top tens of every major MMA division.
But, man, you got to feel for our UK friends. Not being able to, you know, the whole thing was, oh, Bellator 206 is airing live. Yeah. I feel bad for the people that either stayed up or got up at, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Main event starts. Here's a cartoon.
Here's Peppa the Pig. Yeah, dude, Scott Goger, it's not hard. Is not hard. Make your broadcast towards the English audience. It's on streaming. Pace yourself to make sure your crap airs before it gets cut off.
Dude,
do the commercial breaks. It's not hard.
This is what I didn't get. Why could that just not be? Why couldn't UK fans just watch that on DAZN?
Well, I think that's a tough one, because you don't want UK fans to not watch it on TV.
No, I get that, but I'm just like,
as soon as the time is over, you go to
the zone. They clearly knew that they had to be done by 6 a.m. you know, UK time, because of, you know, obviously the what had to be shown. But I'm sitting there going, man, I just, that was the whole thing when, you know, and I understand they wanted it on what was it, on Channel 5 over there. I get you wanted it on regular TV, which I do kind of wonder, are we getting, I'm wondering, are we at a point where MMA promoters have just realized that the growing period of MMA has ended, and it's like, let's just chase streaming money?
Well, the thing is, I think Bellator, first and foremost, if I was advising people, I would say don't run away from TV too fast. And I like that Bellator still airs on the Paramount Network, and I like that Bellator got that deal with Channel 5. Because the UFC is going to be streaming in England. The MMA promotion with the great TV deal is going to be Bellator. People still watch TV. TV is still a resource for people to watch. And it's not about the growing period of TV that makes TV so valuable. The difference between TV and streaming is pretty simple, Jason. All your hardcore fans are going to find your product either way. But your casual fans, unless you are on Netflix, that may be the only one that I can think of. Your casual fans will not find you. Your audience will not grow. Aaron Pico will not be a superstar if all his fights are on DAZN. Simply
put. I think all his fights will be on DAZN. I just wrote this down. I subscribe to 5 streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Netflix, Fight Pass, Amazon Prime, which, you know, get the Amazon Video, DAZN, which technically I'm not paying for yet. And then I have the streaming service. I'm not paying for it because I'm an AT&T customer, but I have the Watch AT&T streaming device, which is, because when I went and got the new iPhone, I changed my plan. I was on that old unlimited plan. And they're like, oh, we'll put you on this new unlimited plan. You get Watch AT&T, which if you're an AT&T customer, it's a great, like, you get all the Time Warner channels, and they're like, oh, you get to pick one premium channel you want. And it was like, I had a choice of like HBO, Showtime, Pandora, which I already have a subscription to, and it was something else. I was like, yeah, give me HBO. And I'm like, man, this is great. But I got to think, like, that's why I wonder with MMA fans, I do wonder, are we getting to a point where all these promotions are on all these different streaming devices that our fans can kind of get that point, go, I don't know if I want to subscribe to another streaming service.
It may just be like that. And you mentioned Aaron Pico's fights will probably all be on DAZN. He could very well be the best fighter in Bellator in about 2 or 3 years, but I'm scared for his star power because I think the eyeballs won't be there if he was fighting on TV, just because it's hard. If he was fighting on TV, I think the eyeballs would be there for a couple of his fights. This is a guy who screams to me he should be on like network TV fighting. Should enjoy Aaron Pico.
Think about this, Dale. Let's go back to June 25th of last year, day after Bellator NYC. Aaron Pico loses in, 24 seconds in his pro debut? Think about what people were saying about Aaron Pico then in comparison to now. You tell me Aaron Pico is fighting, I'm doing what I can to watch the fight. To me, when you talk, and look, and Scott Coker, Rich Chow, Mike Hogan, they have done a tremendous job over the last 4 years of reshaping this Bellator roster. They have done a tremendous job. To me, I mean, look, signing Gegard's great. Signing Rory's great. But I think when it's all said and done, Aaron Pico is going to be the best signing Scott Coker ever made.
Yeah. Well, as long as he continues to win, which he probably will, because it's weird because, for one, we saw his first performance and that was something where it's like, Jesus, the hype. But The thing is, Jason, Pico has looked so great in his fights that every time we praise him, I almost feel like, oh my God, this can't be real. Because he has a lot of hype, and since that first loss, he has exceeded the hype in each performance. So I think in the back of our mind, we all know what this guy is capable of. He's capable of being the best guy in his weight class in either promotion. We know that.
Here's my question about that fight. What the hell did Leandro Higo do to referee Mark Smith?
Yeah, Mark Smith, man, that's something where you have to take the L. You, after that one, you just aren't allowed to referee that night. And maybe for a few weeks. You know, maybe you should go do a massage, put some cucumbers on your eyes, because for the love of God, that was awful. That was so bad. That was dangerous. And the worst thing was Higo took some tough shots prior to getting dropped. Like, this dude is tough. Pico, Jesus Christ, beat the crap out of him. And Higo, before even the time when he should have been finished, was already receiving damage.
Well, if you go back and you watch the sequence there, when he drops in the first time and Pico starts raining down that ground and pound, Higo had no idea where he's at. That's where, and obviously I knew what happened, but I was like, that's where the fight should have been stopped. Higo had no clue what was going on. And I always say this, it's never good when the announcers are yelling stop to fight, especially when the color analysis is John McCarthy.
Dude, you screwed up if you're a referee and John McCarthy criticizes you. That's not to say John's biased, but Big John understands how hard the job is. He has real empathy. And when he goes out, and he knows he's an influence in the referee community, and he knows when he criticizes something or calls for a stoppage, that means a lot. So, yeah, just absolutely screwed up. But again, man, was not expecting this. Leandro Higo challenged for the bantamweight title. Leandro Higo, very talented. Aaron Pico made him look like anybody else he's ran through. He made him look like Lee Morrison, Justin Lin, Shane Kirkton. This was a fight where any other fighter in Bellator, if they went against Leandro Higo and did this to him, they would get a title shot. Aaron Pico may get one, but because he's only 4-1, he may not. And it's just like, you are right that this is the best signing Bellator has made. I think if you're the UFC, you feel you should be embarrassed that you didn't sign this guy. A major mistake. You may get him in the long run, you know, 3 or 4 years down the line. But, you know, right now we're talking about Pico versus Pitbull, maybe Pico versus Caldwell down the line, stuff like that. But Jesus, we should be living in a reality where the idea of Pico versus McGregor is possible.
I'll give you two names for Aaron Pico's next fight. Tell me if it interests you. Sam Cecilia or Juan Archuleta?
Man, I think Sam Cecilia between those two is what interests me. But I will give you Zach Freeman. Why don't we allow Pico to get that win back, Jason?
Well, Pico, I mean, anyone listening to the podcast last week, he made it clear he's not going back to 155. He knows 145 is where he needs to be. So I don't think Zach's coming to 145 to fight him. So
I see. That's a good point. Yeah, dude is 6 foot tall. So I just feel like, you know, Pico, you can do it. You can go back to 155, but Cecilia Archuleta, that's more his speed in terms of, like, these guys are factors, but
I think that here's going to be the question. At the rate that Pico is going, could he beat his teammate AJ McKee to the title fight?
Yes. I think Bellator understands that Pico and McKee will likely not fight anytime soon. They're going to rig this race a little bit. If you ask Bellator, if you ask anyone, who would you rather be your champion, Aaron Pico or AJ McKee? As great as AJ McKee has been, it's a no contest. You want Aaron Pico to be your champ.
Look, here's my advice to Aaron Pico and Bob Cook, his manager. Uh-huh. Fight out your deal. Because, good Lord, could you imagine, and I know earlier this week Pico said he still had a couple fights left on his deal, but could you imagine if he hits the free agent market and the UFC can make him an offer? Good Lord, that kid's going to cash in.
Yeah,
no, because no matter what, if he tests the market, he is going to get overpaid by somebody.
So, question, do you have any idea how many fights are left on his deal?
I do not. I think Bellator would pay him more than the UFC would.
I think so too. Well, I don't know. The thing is, UFC has a lot of resources. And by the time we get to where Pico will be a free agent, the amount of money Bellator maybe will have spent on talent maybe limits that budget. But at the end of the day, Bellator knows what their cash cow is, and it is Aaron Pico. That is what you save all your pennies for.
I'll tell you, in relation to the other fights that took place on this main card, I like the Rampage Vanderlei fight. Yes, it's a Legends fight. Both these guys are well past the prime of their careers, but that was a fun fight to watch. If you're going to go back and watch that fight, fast forward through the first round.
Yeah, the flurry in that second round was epic. It was a throwback. I mean, it was a weekend of a throwback. If you are a fan of not only Bellator, but other MMA, I mean, you also had that Ryzen event where it had some Pride feels. With Bob Sapp getting a victory for the first time in 14 fights. Mirko Krokop was there. You had a kickboxing match between a high-level MMA fighter and Kyoji Horiguchi and the rising kickboxing star. And then here, your Pride throwback was Vanderlei Rampage. And that early moment in that second round was like, whoa, this is enjoyable. I'm not feeling – oh, now I feel really bad. So that was the rough part, is that Vanderlei did look like someone I just saw – you know, walk in the park looking 55 years old, and that was scary. The downside was scary, but man, that was really fun. I'm not gonna lie. Look, I enjoyed it.
No, I'm not saying I want to see the fifth fight between these guys, but
two.
If I am Bellator and you are considering it, there's one of two locations you take that fight to. Location number one, Japan. Location number two, Brazil.
Oh, I love that. I love that a lot. I think a Japan fight between these two would be great. But I think for Rampage, moving. I mean, for Vanderlei, I kind of hope we never see him fight again. Because, like, again, he's incredibly old. And more than that, he has been a part of so many wars that, as fun as this was, man, my biggest takeaway of Vanderlei Silva is that I just don't want to see him fight again. The same goes for Chuck. So that's why I hope we don't see the fifth fight. I think we both know what's going to happen in that fifth fight. Even though Vanderlei landed some shots, Jackson is just so much bigger than Vanderlei that it's just hard to see one of those shots connecting and finishing him. So I think we both know what's going to happen. But for Rampage Jackson, man, another solid talent for Bellator, a guy who's really revitalized himself after two losses. That win over Vanderlei Silva means a lot. And I think Bellator needs to be real smart with his matchmaking, because I think you look at that heavyweight tournament, I think whoever wins that heavyweight tournament, if you could very well defend the title against Rampage Jackson, if he gets another victory and you have a marquee name, hell, maybe you can do Jackson versus Fedor in Japan. But that's only if Fedor wins. So I just think Rampage, if you rehabilitate him right, Jason, by the time the Grand Prix is over, the guy who lost in the quarterfinals could be the first guy to challenge for the title.
No question. Douglas Lima advancing on in the welterweight tournament. One thing, Koreshkov, to me, I haven't seen an evolution of his game plan against Douglas Lima. It seems like he's stuck to the same game plan. You know, Douglas gets that victory in the fifth round. But if you go to the end of the fourth round, when he clipped Koreshkov, that's to me when the fight was pretty much over, because Koreshkov goes back to the corner. It looks like he has no idea in the world where he's at. Shemenko's grabbing him, trying to tell him, and he just looks like he doesn't have anywhere to go. Did you see the awkward video that was on social media with Lima and the bottle of the clearly overpriced champagne, 50 cents, promoting?
No.
Where basically it's like almost like someone's trying to tell Lima, hey, like, you know, act like you're happy to see it. And he's like just very doing like, oh, okay, like, it was a very weird video. I was trying to find it on Bell. I don't know if Bellator maybe he's deleted the video or not, but it was just very awkward.
I heard that Lima did a great job on TV, or great job just in general. Like she's like a star for Bellator.
Oh no question. I think she's the fire to build off of. But yeah, it was. But man, Lima. I mean, you know, we'll talk a little bit about more about Lima in our buy sell segment.
Douglas Lima.
Yeah,
I thought you were saying a Lima Lane McFarlane.
No. Lima was there. Lima was there. Yes,
I know she's there doing coverage. Lima, yeah, Douglas Lima's not gonna freaking advertise your. Douglas Lima does not care about these things. He may not know who 50 Cent is. You know, this dude cares about a couple things. Tapping the guys out and moving on. And look, Lima Koreshkov, not a great fight, Jason, to be honest with you. But
no.
It was quite clear that Lima was the better fighter. And this was all about the skill set between these two. I like the way you laid it out. It was fairly simple. The adjustments just weren't there for Koreshkov. And Douglas, after this fight, kind of about puts himself right there. Like, he is a major threat to Rory McDonald. To be the next guy to be the welterweight champion.
And of course, Bellator, that was Bellator 206, Bellator 207 and 208 take place next weekend on Friday and Saturday. Of course, this Saturday, we've got UFC 229. And if you're looking for some last minute tickets, you need to check out our friends over at Vivid Seats. They are an online event ticket marketplace dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experience that lasts a lifetime. I've used them to buy tickets to go see the Tampa Bay Lightning play. It is a great service. You need to check out our friends over at Vivid Seats.
Oh, can you imagine what it would be like to be inside the building for Nurmagomedov Conor? Really, any live event you go to, it's just a great place to be. And with Vivid Seats, you can find seats to be at your personal favorite live event, whatever it be, sports, concerts, theater, so much more. The thing with Vivid Seats, Jason, is it offers great prices and, more than that, an easy purchasing experience. All you got to do, it will hook you up. Put in the podcast code INFLUENCE. You receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Just put in the podcast code INFLUENCE.
All you got to do is go to the App Store or Google Play, download the Vivid Seats app. It's right now on my phone. Enter that promo code INFLUENCE to receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Fellas, I'm telling you, it's so easy. You go in there, you pick the section that you want. You can sort it by your price, whatever you want to do. It's a great service. So with that podcast code INFLUENCE, INFLUE, NCE, the MMA Report podcast listeners can receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. All Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by a 100% guarantee. So just go to the App Store, download the Vivid Seats app or on Google Play, and enter a promo code INFLUENCE to receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Now, coming up next weekend, it's a big week in MMA. I mentioned about the Bellator events. We also have PFL, and we have Combates America. And the two interviews that you're going to hear are with fighters that are going to be a part of both those fight cards. Up first, you can hear from Rakeem Cleveland, who's taking on Vinny Magalhaes in the beginning of the light heavyweight tournament at PFL. And then you're going to hear from Mario Bautista, the MMA Lab prospect. He's going to be a part of the Combates America show. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man that we got a chance to talk to a little while ago, and he's in preparations for the opening round of the PFL Light Heavyweight Tournament. It is a boogeyman, Rakeem Cleveland. Rakeem, man, appreciate the time. You know, as I was, when I knew we set this interview up, and I was thinking about your fight here, and what was kind of interesting to me is the preparations for this fight, because you're not just preparing for an opening matchup against Vinny Magalhaes, you also have to be preparing for a potential second fight later on that night in the semifinals of this tournament. So have you changed your preparations for this fight in kind of preparing your body for what you're going to expect to get out of your body on October 13th?
Absolutely not, man. With Vinny being the first match, I've been solely concentrating on him. The other two guys, you know, they're good strikers, not necessarily as dangerous as Vinny is in the other realm of the fighting as far as grappling. So I've been focusing on you know, my grappling and being more active for this fight.
Obviously, Vinny's grappling is unbelievable. I mean, anyone who follows MMA knows about Vinny's grappling game. You know, so and I know I was also another interview you did. You talked about some of the guys you're working down at ATT with the grappling. But is it also one of those things of, yes, you've got to, you know, put additional preparations to the grappling, but also you can't forget about the other aspects of the game?
Right. Yeah. You know, he's a great grappler, one of the best in the world, but he also, you know, he's a decent striker too. So you have to focus on both. But, you know, with me being a striker naturally, I'm definitely focusing on my ground game and, you know, trying to keep things on the feet.
I mean, do you feel like people undervalue his striking game?
I do. I think his last opponent did too, you know, and that was a mistake. So you can't really ever underestimate somebody, especially somebody of our size, you know, because even if it's not the cleanest technique, you know, it always takes only one good shot to get you wobbled or hurt or even out of the fight. So you always got to focus on every aspect of the game, you know, even per se, you know, they say he's a grappler, you know, he's a mixed martial artist. So at the end of the day, you know, the fight starts on the feet. So he has to have some kind of discipline in striking. So I'm definitely aware of what he does on his feet, but I'd rather be on the feet with him than on the ground.
How much of your preparation, you know, for this matchup is also going back and looking at your two fights inside the PFL cage and breaking yourself down and seeing what you did right, what you did wrong, and maybe trying to pick up on what things Vinny and his team are looking at?
A lot of it. You know, I watched my past fights, you know, not even just these last two, but the ones before that. And I look at the openings that I leave and I try to correct those. That's a big part of fighting is correcting yourself first, because, you know, you can work on, you know, stopping someone else, but if you're not fixing the holes in your game, then it doesn't really matter. So we've definitely been looking at that, breaking stuff down and trying to correct a lot of it.
Is that ultimately the stuff that keeps you up at night? It's not about what your opponent does. It's more about, you know, the things that you just haven't done right in the cage. Is that the stuff that, like, you just lay in bed and you're constantly thinking about of just those little minor mistakes?
Yeah, it's definitely something I'm aware of, you know, just like my last fight. You know, I made a minor mistake that ultimately, you know, gave up my back. And, you know, we all know how the fight ended. So it's small things like that, small steps, you know, instead of turning right, I should have turned left into him. And, you know, stuff like that, that you have to focus on. And it, sometimes it's against the natural movement that you're used to doing. So it takes a little bit more attention.
You know, obviously you weren't unable to get a victory in your last fight, which you were just mentioning there. Is it short-term memory with that fight where you just have to move on past it? Or is it one of those things that it constantly lives with you because ultimately that's what's going to make you a better fighter?
You know, a little bit of both. You have to think about and rewatch what you did wrong, and you have to focus on the things you did wrong, but you also have to look at the things you did right. And, you know, vice versa, you know, different scenarios of it. But in this format, you know, with things happening so quickly, you can't really dwell on it too long because, you know, like you see, it's already up to the next fight and it's time to get ready for, you know, the tournament and the playoffs.
I mean, is the last couple of months more been about, you know, training smart, making sure you're taking care of your body? I know you've talked about it in other interviews. The last time we talked about your use of CBD. I mean, is that really the biggest part of this format, is just making sure you're taking care of your body?
Yeah, especially now with the chances of fighting twice in one night. If you go into your first fight already feeling banged up or with small injuries, and you know, you win your first fight, but you injure yourself more, you're hampering yourself for the next match. So taking care of your body and being as healthy as you can is a big part of especially a tournament style fighting.
I know you trained there with King Mo down at ATT. Did you talk to him about how when he had the one night tournament in Bellator and what he's done over Japan about kind of the in between fights? I mean, obviously in Bellator, an injury, you know, took him out of that tournament. But did you talk to him about his mindset of how he just kind of make sure your body, you know, after that first fight doesn't kind of tense up?
Yeah, definitely. We talk about things. We're working on some things, and just really, you know, going back in the back and recovering is going to be a big factor. But also staying loose and not letting yourself tighten up and letting yourself feel that pain that sets in after you settle down and all the adrenaline wears off. So, which is always going to be some, especially if you take some shots or, you know, getting some crazy grappling exchanges, you're going to feel a little bit of muscle fatigue. But we're working on getting through those stages and staying fresh for the next one.
As we're talking, we're less than a month out from this fight. I mean, what is the next couple of weeks like for you? Is it are you at that stage where you're kind of, you know, starting just kind of it's tapering down training a little bit and it's more just, you know, working on the finer details?
Definitely. I'm still doing a little bit of hard stuff, but we're definitely focusing on the minor details, keeping healthy, building up the cardio as much as I can, because that's going to be a key factor, and just sharpening the tools.
How would you say you're a different fighter heading into this fight as opposed to your last fight?
I think you'll definitely see more aggressive, more forward pace. You know, my last fight, I was kind of on the back foot a lot, kind of letting him dictate the pace, and I was kind of trying to counter-strike more than anything. But with the scenario of, you know, basically grappler versus striker, I got to be first. If I let him close the space and trap me against the cage or in the corner, you know, that's his benefit. So definitely forward motion and a lot of pressure.
I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation here, the nickname, the Boogeyman. What is the origin of this nickname?
Oh man, I'm just a guy that scares a lot of people. You know, it was given to me by the fans. So it kind of stuck. That's what they want to call me. That's what it is. I try to live up to it and keep people fearful.
Now, do you truly like the nickname? Cause it almost sounds like you're like,
I like it. You know, it was just one of those situations that I didn't want to pick my own name. So I got a lot of names tossed at me and one finally stuck. So we kind of just went with it. And, you know, here I am today.
You know, I mean, you mentioned the nickname. People might hear that. Maybe they get perceptions, whatnot. I mean, what would be the perception that people would have of you And then they meet you and they kind of realize like, no, man, that I what I thought of Rakim is totally different.
I guess people would think I'm you know, I'm more scary or whatnot and intense. I'm a fun person. I'm you know, I like to crack jokes. I like to talk a lot of trash. So, you know, hanging with King Mo, I'll definitely give him his run for his money. You know, that's how our conversation started. Hey, what's up? Straight to trash talk. So, you know, I just like to have fun with it. I enjoy the sport. And the nickname, it fits me as far as in the cage, but outside of the cage, I'm a fun person.
It seems like what all fighters kind of say this of like, you know, people just think I'm this mean person. Like I'm this nice guy. I'm easygoing guy. I mean, is it almost like for you, it's when you step inside that cage or that ring, it's a flip that switches and you go from, you know, Rakim, the guy to Rakim, the fighter. And they're just, it's a very different personality.
Yeah, definitely. You got to have your separation when it comes down to this, because, you know, when you get in a cage, you kind of put everything in the back of your mind and prepare for destruction. So, you know, I'm in a seek and destroy, and we could be friends after.
And anyone that follows you on your Instagram will notice you do a lot of shout outs to the people that support you. So let everyone know who the companies that are support you and where everybody can follow you out on social media.
You can follow me on Instagram at Rakim the Boogeyman Cleveland, Facebook Rakim the Boogeyman Cleveland. My Twitter handle is Team Rakim 58. And I just want to give a shout out to Dakota Fight Gear, Grishka Chiropractic, Terp House, Quest Nutrition, Impact Mouth Guards, Skylar Orthopedics, G Fuel Energy Supplements, Doc's Lounge back in Iowa. You know, if I'm forgetting anyone, I'm sorry, but you know, I just want to thank everyone for the support and all the fans, my family, and you know, look for a good show.
Rakim, man, as always, I appreciate time and look forward to seeing the fight here on October 13th, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man we've had on the show before. And he's got a fight coming up here at the Combates America show on October the 13th. Takes on Juan Pablo Gonzalez. It is Mario Bautista. Mario, as always, man, appreciate the time. I had one of your coaches on the podcast last week, Eddie Cha, and he was raving about you. So tell me a little bit about Eddie and kind of how he has you know, helped take your game to the level it's at right now.
Yeah, Eddie, I mean, ever since we had Eddie, man, we needed a striking coach. And, you know, he's came to our team. And he's just put in 100% into us. You know, he's not halfway there. You know, he wants us to, you know, succeed. And he puts in the effort with us. So we've just seen a great benefit since he's been with us.
And any good stories you can share about, you know, Eddie and what he's like inside the gym?
Eddie, I mean, he's very passionate about what he does. I don't have any crazy stories. I'm sure some of the guys do, but I haven't fought, you know, where I had to stay with him in a hotel or anything. So not too crazy stories yet. I'm sure they'll come, though.
And of course, you're coming off that win at LFA 44. That was back in June, end of June. So, you know, what's the last couple months been like for you?
It's been good. Just back in the training room. I mean, not training, you know, not doing a camp or anything, but just working on technique, you know, just staying sharp. And then once these fights come around, you know, that's when we start pushing the conditioning and everything. But for the most part, I'm just, you know, back in the gym, just working on my technique and whatnot.
As we're talking, Combat Day, I remember getting a press release probably on this fight, you know, 2 or 3 days ago for your fight against Juan here. So how long have you actually known about this matchup?
I've known about it for about, I want to say 2 weeks now. I think that's when they offered me him. But we were actually supposed to fight back in March for another promotion. And he got hurt, I think, a week before the fight. So yeah, he's been, you know, on the radar for a little bit now.
So how is preparations different now as opposed to when you're supposed to fight him earlier this year?
Not too much different. I mean, I think he had a fight like a month later. I didn't see too much of a difference, you know, in his style, you know, in the, and just carrying on from the last camp that I, you know, that I was preparing for him, you know, so we kind of have an idea of what we're doing. So if anything, I just had more time, so.
I mean, you're still young in your career. I mean, you're going to be a different fighter every time you step into the cage, whether we're talking about what you were in June or what you are now. I mean, as you evaluate yourself, how do you see yourself evolving as a martial artist?
You know, I think I'm just getting more comfortable in the cage, you know, taking my time with things. And it's just that ring experience. And I think that's what I'm, you know, getting now.
I mean, you hear fighters talk about that all the time, of getting comfortable. For just the average MMA fan, I mean, can you kind of describe, like, what that feeling is of when you understand that you're comfortable in there on fight night?
Yeah, so, like, with, you know, your first couple of fights, you don't even think about having rounds, you know. Oh, you got a second round or a third round. Sometimes, or my mindset, anyway, was going there, you know, there's no rounds for me. It's a fight. Everything's chaotic. But now being with the lab, doing actual rounds, having an actual training camp, it's just you see everything in there. It's almost like sparring. You see the benefit of sparring, and you could capitalize on a lot more things that, instead of making it, you know, all chaotic and making it, you know, of a fight. So that's the benefit I see from it.
You hear fighters talk about, you know, I'm inside of a training camp, or I'm just, you know, training. For you, what is the difference between just going in and training, and a difference of, and then when you're in a training camp? How does your training differ between the two?
Yeah, so when I'm like in the off season, you know, I'm still in the gym, you know, I just, you know, I don't, you know, I don't rev it 100%, you know, I focus more on technique, learning. And during the camp, you know, I try not to learn too much. You know, I try to drill a lot more, get everything that I do know down perfect, my timing and everything, and also getting my conditioning there. You know, you're not going to learn too much in 5-6 weeks, you know, that shouldn't be the time for you to be learning something new. That should be the time for you to, you know, sharpen everything. So.
In terms of the matchup here against Juan, what gets you excited about this fight? What is there something about his abilities that you want to test yourself? Maybe you want to prove something to yourself. What gets you like, man? I'm so looking forward to this matchup.
No, absolutely, man. I've seen him fight. He's tough, you know, and he's a scrapper, man. I'm excited for this fight. You know, he's not gonna just roll over. Like I said, I've seen him fight. He's short, stocky, and he's game. So that makes me excited. You know, someone that's gonna, you know, create a challenge for me. From what I see, and you know, I'm looking to overcome it. So.
It should be noted that Combates America now on DAZN for the fans in the United States and Canada who want to see this broadcast in English. You definitely want to check out DAZN, of course, Bellator on there, Matchroom Boxing on there as well. I mean, the cliche in the fight game is this is the toughest fight of my career. He's got a very impressive record, 7-1-2. I mean, as you have broken him down, and why would you say this is the toughest fight of your career?
His record, you know, I think he just, for one, he trains at, I believe he trains at Alliance. I could be wrong about that, but I think he trains there. He's coming from a good gym, you know, and like I said, I've seen him fight. He's tough. He's gone to the decision, I think like 4 or 5 times at least. He knows how to go the distance. You know, he's not going to, you know, blow his gas tank or, and I'm excited for this fight. I want this kind of challenge, someone that's going to be smart in there to challenge myself as well. So.
What do you believe your key to victory is in this matchup?
Making it in an MMA fight. You know, I'm not going to keep it standing. It's just not going to be on the ground. I'm going to, you know, test him everywhere. With all my fights, I'll find an opening and get the finish.
Final thing, Marlon, it's always appreciate time. So when you're not in the gym right now, what are you doing to keep your mind off the fight game?
Oh, man, I just try to surround myself with family, you know, do whatever I can, especially on my rest days, you know, anything that kind of keep my mind off of it. And then when I'm in camp or back in the training room, that's all I think about. So
where can everybody follow you out on social media?
Oh, at Instagram, Mario Bautista, MMA, I believe. And you can find me on Twitter. I forget my Twitter handle. I think it's like at Mario Bautista. But you'll be able to find me on there.
Mario, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Look forward to seeing the fight here next month. And good luck in the fight.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And there was my conversations with Rakeem Cleveland and Mario Bautista. Really interesting to kind of hear Rakeem talk about the mindset going into next week's card PFL, where if he beats Vinny Magalhaes, he's got to fight later on that night in the semifinals of that light heavyweight tournament. Of course, Mario Bautista, a guy to remember out of the MMA lab. We had Eddie Cha on a couple weeks ago, the head striking coach at the MMA lab, and he was praising Mario Bautista. So look forward to seeing that. But let's get right into our buy sell segment. You heard myself and Daniel talking about AJ McKee and Aaron Pico. Daniel, buy sell AJ McKee and Aaron Pico ever fight?
Man, these two guys should fight one day. You look at the Bellator division and you see these are the two shining stars. Usually those two guys fight, but I'm going to sell this because I think these two guys clearly don't want to fight now. And also, I think by the time these guys will eventually maybe fight, hypothetically down the line, they may be in two different promotions.
Yeah, I'm selling this. This is a question that essentially brought up to Aaron Pico last week, and he made it clear that would not fight AJ McKee. Also, you got to remember, Aaron's head coach is AJ's father. So clearly that fight definitely is not going to happen. Buy or sell? Nate Diaz versus Dustin Poirier ends up being a 165-pound title fight at UFC 230. Dana White has he's not interested in this. And I would love to buy this because I wish the UFC would do a 165-pound weight class. But it's very clear this is one of those things Dana White does not want to do, so I'm selling it.
Yeah, I'm selling it too. But I guess you already gave your answer. But if we flip this as should they do it, you would say you would buy it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I do too. I think they probably should have done it. I think that would have been some nice buzz for UFC 230, where this is a new division, welterweight to 175, whatever this is 165, and this is your main event, a title fight. Nate Diaz, Dustin Poirier. It'd be a great opportunity to put a title around Nate Diaz's waist, but maybe Dana White just didn't want the headache of having to negotiate with the champion named Nate Diaz.
Yeah, maybe that. I think you're probably spot on that. Next up, buy or sell, Douglas Lima is the favorite now to win the welterweight tournament.
I'm going to buy this, Jason. Obviously, headed into the welterweight tournament, Rory was easily the favorite. But because Rory's coming off this loss, because, hell, there might be a chance he doesn't even fight. Just because, clearly, his face received a lot of damage in the Musasi fight. Because of all that, and the fact that Lima only needs two more wins to win the tournament, I'm going to buy this. How about you?
I'm selling it. Roy, to me, still is a favorite. Even though he lost to Gegard, I expect he'll roll through John Fitch. I expect he'll fight Ed Ruth in the semifinals. I just think that it's going to be a little too fast for Ed Ruth to take on a guy like Rory. So to me, Rory is still the favorite in my mind to win this tournament. Final buy-sell, winner of Conor Khabib faces Tony Ferguson next. If Tony beats Anthony Pettis.
You know what? I could be snarky and sell it because, hell, that's not being snarky. That's just looking at history that Tony won't get a fight because somebody's going to pull out. And I know Dana White said, like, we're never going to make this fight or something like that. He may not have said that exactly after that last Ferguson and Nurmagomedov got canceled. But I'm going to buy it because, look, all the eyeballs are going to be on this pay-per-view. Tony's in the great spot to win the fight. Be impressive in front of all these fans and have an epic post-fight interview to put pressure on the UFC to make this fight. So I'm going to buy it.
See, to me, it's about who wins between Conor and Khabib. If Khabib wins, I'm totally buying this. If Conor wins, I'm selling it. I think if Conor wins on Saturday night, I don't think
I think his next fight is against Tyron Woodley.
I could see that for sure. I think it is Tony Ferguson's. Tony Ferguson needs to understand what he wants to do in the cage after he wins. He needs to be meticulous with it. He needs to force Connor's hand. Because what will bring Connor in the cage of Ferguson over Woodley is if Tony does or says something that makes people want to buy Ferguson McGregor more than Woodley McGregor. So it is on Tony to figure out what he needs to do in that cage when Joe Rogan's talking to him.
Oh, totally. It's all about the you got to get the attention of Conor McGregor if Conor wins. But I mean, look, Ferguson Khabib is a fight that we've wanted to see for years. Hopefully it does happen at some point. Now, let's wrap up this week's podcast, talk about some of the latest news and items going on in MMA. We mentioned about UFC 230. Dana White announcing that the vacant women's flyweight title is on the line in the main event of UFC 230, Shevchenko versus Eubanks. Are you kidding me? This is the main event? Really?
Dude, this is worse than Montano versus Shevchenko. How did they have an opportunity to put anybody in the fight?
If you want a title fight on 230, I'm fine with that. But I'm sorry, and I wrote this on social media on Tuesday. This is meant as no disrespect to Shevchenko or to Eubanks, but people who are tuning in to UFC 230 are not buying that pay-per-view because they're on this fight card. They're buying it because they want to see Nate Diaz and Dustin Poirier battle it out because that's just a great matchup. And unfortunately, the new UFC, like, it's like they have this thing, oh, every pay-per-view's got to have a title fight. Like, it's one of those things of, and I'll be honest with the, you know, so they announced this fight, and within about an hour later, they announced the main event of the tough finale, Dos Anjos versus Usman. 1,000% better main event.
It is. It is literally a more marketable main event. Which is still to say, if you headline UFC Madison Square Garden with Dos Anjos Usman, you are talking 70,000 buys, but would watch. I will just to go back to the Eubanks fight real quick. Wasn't the best headline Joe Rogan saying he doesn't know who Eubanks is?
I didn't read this story, but I saw something, maybe it was on Reddit, where it was like, Rogan's like, no disrespect, but I'm a commentator for UFC and I don't know who this girl is. I'm like, ooh, ouch.
Joe Rogan doesn't give a S, like he does not care. That was hilarious. But yeah, poor Valentina Shevchenko. We both know she's incredibly talented, Jason, but her biggest issue in this division is not having a worthy opponent.
Give the fights the fans want to see. So the fight the fans want to see is Shevchenko and Joanna. Apparently Joanna wasn't ready for November, but would have been ready for December.
Yeah, that's Let her fight in December. It's so freaking dumb. No one cares about Shevchenko Eubanks. It's a bad fight.
It's also another example of the UFC does too many pay-per-views because you don't have marketable fights that just make Nate Diaz the main event. Let's find out if Nate Diaz is a pay-per-view draw. I mean, it's just like,
he totally is.
I saw that and I'm just like, are you effing kidding me? Dave, look, put yourself in my shoes, running marketing for a restaurant that shows UFC events. You tell me, and literally, I've already thought of this. When I market that pay-per-view, it's all about Nate Diaz, Dustin Poirier, because this is the reality of it. And once again, no disrespect to those fighters, but they're not bringing anybody into the bar on a Saturday night to watch a UFC pay-per-view.
Yep. You walk in a bar, you ask everyone in the bar, do you know who Valentina Shevchenko is? None of them will say I do. And don't even get me started on Eubanks. You go into a bar, you know who Nate Diaz is? Man, probably 80% will.
Oh, and look, Saturday night would be a prime audience to ask that question to because you know you're going to have a mix of hardcore MMA fans, casual MMA fans, and just sports fans that, oh, this is a big fight. I got to go out and watch it.
First off, none of them are, okay, the hardcore fans would probably know who Eubanks is, but those casual and just regular sports fans will have no clue who either one of those fighters are.
100% agree with you, Jason.
God, that is just an. I feel bad for if someone has paid for tickets, and that's what they're selling you as a main event.
Those tickets, I guarantee you, were expensive too.
Oh, you know it was. Like I don't know. You just think with a Madison Square Garden car, you expect a huge main event, and man, that didn't fit the bill. Now, I will say this. There was something that came out over the last week that I was like, thank God, about goddamn time. The UFC and USADA will no longer announce potential anti-doping policy violations. What took you so long?
So, I need you to walk me through this, Jason. What does this mean exactly when it comes to how long does it take for potential to be this is a violation?
So, okay. So for instance, you would not know about a failed drug test unless the fighter put it out there, like what, you know, Sean O'Malley did. Oh, so, you know, the thing about it is when they put that potential violation out there, that guy gets labeled as a PED user, no matter what. Now, since that's not out there, you won't know till after the fact. I did get a good chuckle. Did you read the story that Fabricio Werdum did? Where he's talking about basically USADA asking to be a snitch and how he felt like a criminal talking to USADA?
No, I didn't see that. That's impressive.
Basically said, he goes, bro, I ain't no snitch.
Damn.
I like it, Fabricio. Like, because look, you know there are people in Jackson Wink right now. They're giving John that stink eye. They're like, you ain't telling on me, fool.
You know, a great quote I heard from Dave Meltzer was, John Jones wasn't on trial. USADA was in that case. USADA was on trial because it was just a matter of, does your system work against superstars? So just walk me through this one more time because I'm trying to figure this out, this potential violation. Are they waiting until confirmation to announce for sure that this was a violation?
Until you go through the entire process. So whether you reach a settlement with USADA, you go to arbitration, that the announcement will not come till that fact, which this should have been the whole time anyway. Because it's just, if a guy, you know, they label a potential violation and it's proven that, you know, Tim Means, perfect example of this. You know, Tim Means, it was proven it was a supplement that was, you know, tainted. He wasn't really trying to cheat. He gets labeled as a PED user, you know, right from the start. This is something this should have been the policy from day one. Like, you love the transparency, but also it wasn't fighter friendly, which has always been my problem with USADA. It's a dictatorship. That policy should have been collectively bargained. And there are a lot of things I don't care for USADA about, you know, I just, but thank God they finally brought this policy into effect.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just do think, man, giving away transparency is rough, but it probably makes more sense not to label guys before we're completely sure. I will still say every time we talk about USADA, I am done with USADA. We need to move on. need to move on from, like, USADA should not be the drug testing agency or whatever, they should not be involved in MMA anymore. I am so done with USADA.
And the USADA policy that UFC fighters have signed is complete BS. It's just the fact that you got to hold them harmless. It's BS. But let's move on. Let's move on to the final thing to mention here. Max Holloway, Brian Ortega is the main event of UFC 231, the event in Toronto at the beginning of December. Man, when I think about fights after this weekend, I'm looking forward to, that's got to be my number one fight.
I think so too, Jason. This is a phenomenal fight. We've had it scheduled many, many times, or at least a couple. And, you know, great fight. Can't wait for it. Now let's not talk about it until fight week. Don't want to jinx it. Knock on some wood.
Yeah, let's knock on that wood. Let's see if it happened. So we haven't done this in a while, Daniel. I'm just going to spur this on you. We used to always do this thing. Daniel Galvan suggested buffalo wing sauce for the fights this weekend. What is it?
Okay. I always suggest buffalo wild wing sauce. And really, if you're going to watch the, if you're going to watch the fight at a Buffalo Wings establishment, it's going to be Buffalo Wild Wings probably. But if you're going to do takeout and you go into Wingstop, you got to get some fries because they they're well seasoned. But it is a bit of a ripoff of the Asian Zing sauce. But at Wingstop, I thoroughly enjoy the spicy Korean Q sauce. It is delicious. You should try it. The perfect mixture of spiciness and sweetness. And in addition to that, by God, order some hot wings to give you that little spicy flavor. But since this is a Conor McGregor fight, likely you're doing house parties. Buy a crap load of Wingstop wings and buy some spicy Korean Q wings. And for the love of God, those wings better have a bone in them.
Do you want to know what the meal is here at my house for the party?
What is it? A salad?
Steak.
Oh, damn.
Dan was like, I'm on a flight to Tampa now.
Yeah, dude. Damn. That is fitting for a Conor McGregor fight, eating steak. Wow. You cooking all of them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Look, I don't cook many things. I'm a grill guy. Give me a grill. Yeah. We're going to marinate the steaks up. And, yeah, we're going to have a nice little shindig here at the house on Saturday. So, yeah, wow. I'm looking forward to it, man. Hopefully these fights deliver. Looking forward to that main event. But there's definitely other fights in this card that I'm looking forward to. If you're in Las Vegas or heading out there and maybe you don't have tickets yet, be sure to hit up our friends over at Vivid Seats. Download the app, and with your first purchase, put in that podcast code INFLUENCE, and you can receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Of course, all Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by a 100% guarantee. I'm looking forward to the fights this weekend. Daniel's looking forward to fights this weekend. If you're in Vegas, have a good time at the fights. Have a good time. Have a good time on this trip. And, of course, we'll be back next week to recap everything that happened at UFC 229. Also, coming up on next week's podcast, we'll have some fighter interviews as well. You'll hear from Ray Rodriguez, who's going to be headlining the upcoming LFA card in Texas. Also, Henry Corrales, who is a part of the Bellator card next Saturday night up in New York, as he's going to be taking on Andy Main. So look forward to that here on next week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, of course, which comes out every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Valor Hour Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Mark, your thoughts on this press conference, and do you have any? Is there anything that you took from it that changed your opinion or outlook on this fight, or is it just as you thought? Still,
it's kind of as I thought. Khabib was a little bit less bothered than what I thought he might be, but ultimately he ain't been on this level, man. He ain't fought nobody at this level. He ain't never had every eye in the whole place on his ass, and I think he gets slept with him too.
The Valor Hour with Tim Loy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.